Welcome to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast, all about constructing your career in neurology. I'm your host, Sagari Bete, from the Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center of Boca Raton. And today, as part of the Types of Careers series, I will be speaking with Dr. Jill Breen Kramer, the owner of Blue Ridge Associates in Neurology and the director of the Roanoke Area MS Center. Thank you for joining me today, Jill.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
To anchor our listeners, I'd like to start out by asking you if there's a special definition of a rural location or underserved population. Does any community outside of an urban area qualify as such?
I'm sure that there are, for the purposes of government funding or Medicare, I'm sure there are special definitions of a rural location. If I were to define it from my perspective, it would be an area where the people and the resources are spread out over a large geographic distribution. So not too far outside of the town where I live, you go a little bit far north, a little bit far east, a little bit far west, people are spread out by miles. You can go 2 or 3 miles down the road before you see another house. It's a farming community that has been raising cattle for generations and generations, and it's truly rolling hills, no buildings for miles. I think most of us would consider that rural.
And how did you decide to pursue a career in this location?
So, like a lot of us in neurology, I sort of stumbled into where I am and just got comfortable. I was in Denver, Colorado, which is not rural, and none of my offices were in a rural area. It was very urban, and I was looking for a place to practice back on the East Coast. It turns out for my first 2 years of undergraduate school, I went to Virginia Tech. So when I saw a job listing on a neurology board for a job in Southwest Virginia at this little hospital called Montgomery Regional, I thought, huh, that's where I candy striped as an undergrad many, many years ago, and made a couple phone calls. And sure enough, I was basically coming back home. So I already knew the community, already knew the lay of the land, and was very interested in coming back to the East Coast. So I kind of stumbled upon a loop back to my beginnings.
Do you think that's how most people find out about these positions, by chance? I mean, or is there a structured way? I know there are certainly a lot of emails and text messages from recruiters about positions in rural locations or with underserved populations. But how do you think most people do this?
You know, it's kind of a hot mess in some ways. You could contact a recruiter, and they're going to cost your new employer a lot of money, so you're probably going to have more difficulty coming to terms with how much money you're going to make and putting together a package if you've gone through a recruiter. I went to the AAN website, which keeps a list of neurology positions. I actually cold called a couple of hospitals and said, hey, do you all need a neurologist? And I was trying to get anywhere from my home state of Maryland down to North Carolina. Cold calling hospitals doesn't work, by the way. You have to have a lead. And then I would talk to other, when I would go visit a practice in an area, I would talk with the other physicians and say, you know, who else is hiring? So I did some networking also. And I'm a part of the women neurology group. And we are constantly talking to each other about positions that are available. And if somebody posts up that they're looking for a position in a certain area, they'll have 30 job opportunities by the time I close down my computer for the night. So I think there are a lot of different ways of finding these positions at this point. I guess I'm not sure how most people do it. I've been here for almost 20 years, so I haven't looked for a job in a minute.
And you alluded to the recruiters costing an employer to find a person, a neurologist. What about those programs that are talking about financial incentives to work in these locations or with these populations? Should people be pursuing these job opportunities for those reasons, or should they be wary?
That is such a good question, because a lot of times we call this gotcha money. So now you're sort of stuck in an area and you get there and find out this was not a desirable job situation, or you get the old bait and switch. Oh, you can easily make $400,000 a year, and you go in and they don't have the volume, or you're not able to do the procedures that would reimburse, or patients don't have access, so you get a lot of no-shows and rescheduling in the last minute, so your schedule is open 6 months in. You know what? Sorry, doctor, we can't afford to pay you $400,000. You're just not doing the volume of work that you signed up for by your contract. So we're going to slash you down to $150,000 or some other crazy number that you never agreed to. But now you have a 3-year contract and there's nothing you can do about it. I think talking to other people that have taken jobs before you is really key, because it is so easy to get wowed by the, we'll pay back all of your medical school bills. I mean, who would not want that to happen? We'll put your kids through college. I think you have to be careful with the money. You really need to take a look at, is this a job that you want? Is this a place that you want to live? If you don't want to live in Southern Idaho, you probably shouldn't take a $500,000 a year job and go live in Southern Idaho. You're just not going to be happy no matter how much money it is.
You had some familiarity with the location, the environment, the potential lifestyle of the area that you were moving to. And how would you recommend that someone explore the area that they might be considering if they've never lived there before? It sounds like these locations might be difficult to visit in the traditional sense.
You know, and certainly visiting versus living there and being around the people and going shopping at Walmart it's different. We have a resort lake near us, and I talked with another neurologist several years ago who said, oh, I would love to come to that area if you have a job opportunity, because I've been on vacation at this nearby lake. And I said, that lake is not how we live. And that being on vacation at the lake is going to be very different than working and living in this area. And we do find in a rural area, or, you know, in Southwest Virginia, even Roanoke, which is a reasonably sized city, does not have a lot of resources. We find it's actually very hard to find physicians, physical therapists, professionals who want to come to the area and stay, if they're not already tied somehow to the area. They went to Virginia Tech, or their parents moved here, or they grew up in the area. It's very difficult because it's not like it is on TV. You're not going to some cute little town where they have fun barbecues and fairs on a regular basis. This is living and existing in a population that has lower density, fewer resources, and may not have some of the perks that you're used to. We got so excited when Chick-fil-A came to town, for example. I mean, no big deal for most people, right? We lost our minds. And we had a 2 different office supply stores. So we had a Staples and we had an Office Max. They both closed. I have to drive an hour to get office supplies if I want office supplies. So things that you wouldn't really think of can be a challenge. So I think you want to talk to people that live there. Why are they there? Are they similar to you? Do they have a lifestyle like yours? You know, are they raising young kids like you are? Or are they, you know, in the dating pool and not married yet like you are? Or are they in the second half of their career like you are? And how do they access the limited resources? Because it really, depending on where you are in your life cycle, you might want a different thing out of a different part of the world where you're going anyhow.
And are there personal challenges that you've encountered, for example, with your family or friends or socializing in a community where everyone could be your patient?
Oh gosh, it feels like everybody is my patient. So I've had people that I run into over at Target, and somebody will come up and say, "Oh, I need my medication." And I'll think, "I can't remember your name," but people can be very familiar with you. My kids think I know everybody because there's always somebody who says hi to me wherever we go. It's different. So I came from Denver, which is obviously a big city, where I might walk across the street and a patient might wave to me, to a place where, my veterinarian probably employs one of my patients and I need to interact with this person at the veterinarian's office. Or I might be checking out at the bank and, oh, there's my patient with dementia's daughter who's handling the money. Or the dentist might be cleaning my teeth one day and coming to see me for their migraines the next day. So we have to have almost this division of what we're doing in each location so it doesn't get blurry and mushed. And you're not feeling awkward or making patients feel awkward because you're running into each other in all kinds of places. I think the biggest personal challenge that I have encountered in this area has just been the lack of some resources. Like, there is no place to buy decent professional clothing. So if I want to buy something from White House Black Market or Ann Taylor or, any place like that, I've got to drive a good solid 2 hours, 3 hours away, or shop online, which has its own challenges. You get this box of stuff, half of it fits, and then you have to go find the UPS store, get there when they're open. Working hours are a little shorter in small towns than they are in big cities because one guy is running the UPS store. So it's more how challenging it can be to get things done that are super easy in a big city. I recently went to New York City and I was in a building that had two shoe repair people. Two. You know how many the entire region around me has? One guy, and he's backed up for 6 months, and I'm not even sure what his phone number is. So getting things done is kind of challenging.
Now, what about in terms of professional challenges? In terms of that, I can imagine that getting things done would also be challenging. How's it really like?
I got used to if I needed to get my patient in with another specialist, it was going to happen within 4 to 6 weeks when I lived in Denver. I got used to if I had a question, I had nearby colleagues. If I needed an internist to call me back, I just picked up the phone and they called me back. Well, in a smaller community, first of all, we have fewer physicians in general. We often have a sicker population that can't make it to the big cities. So we're taking care of people that we may not have a full breadth of resources to help them. So, for example, I may need somebody who needs an ankle foot orthotic. There is one place around here that does ankle foot orthotics. And if they're backed up, they're backed up and they're not going to get in touch with your patient potentially for several months. There aren't other people we can call. If I want a primary care to call me back and answer a question, might or might not happen today, tomorrow, next week. It's when everybody can get around to it. So we're all much busier with fewer resources, and that does present some significant challenges taking care of patients.
In terms of your office setup, do you think it's pretty similar to what other people are used to in terms of your support staff, other clinicians, nurses, and so on? Or are there differences there as well?
No, I think I run a pretty traditional practice. It's myself, a physician assistant, two medical assistants and two front desk personnel, and then one referrals coordinator and billing coordinator who loves joining our meetings from her beach in Florida. But that's a weird example, right? If you're living in a city and your billing referrals person moves to Florida, you just hire somebody else in the city. We don't have a lot of billing referrals coordinators, so I held on to my coordinator when she moved halfway down the East Coast away from us. And we do a lot of things remotely because we don't have the resources of trained personnel in this area who are available to do that work.
Was it difficult to find even these staff?
Oh, I could tell you stories. Yes. There's a fairly small pool of people that have the experience and the professionalism to really function well in a practice. And you know you don't have a whole lot of choices. So it's actually very difficult if somebody's not working out to say, oh, I'm sorry, I'll just find somebody else. I might not. So I sometimes have had staff that weren't up to the job, and I had to hold on to them because I didn't have anybody else who could even do the work. Currently, I have the most amazing staff. They're fantastic. But if one of them left, all of us would be doing part of their job. We don't have a lot of breadth or depth to the personnel so that we can afford if one person leaves, which makes it very, very difficult.
In terms of your job as a neurologist, before we started recording, we talked about the fact that you're practicing general neurology. Would you recommend that to others who are considering a career in a rural location? Or is there any type of subspecialization that you would say would prepare them well for this type of career path?
You know, if you're going to be in a rural area or an underserved area in general, you need to know a lot of tricks of the trade. And I do not have subspecialty training, so I don't know what a fellowship looks like firsthand. I wasn't trained by fellowship. But I think my concern would be that if you get trained in one specific area, but then you need to see, for example, if I were an MS specialist, I would have a much harder time doing an EMG on my carpal tunnel patient because I'm not as familiar with carpal tunnel. I need to be familiar with the basics of any neurological disease that comes into my office, from Duchenne's muscular dystrophy to Charcot-Marie-Tooth to Lou Gehrig's disease to multiple sclerosis to migraine to peripheral neuropathy to carcinomatous meningitis. I have seen all of them in my practice in this area. I think the one area that might be very helpful would be a neurophysiology fellowship, because you'd have that EEG, EMG experience and wouldn't need to send patients out for those kinds of tests. Otherwise, just about anything else, you can learn as you go and figure it out and go to meetings. But those skills are very, very helpful and would serve somebody who wants to do a general neurology in an underserved area very well.
Do you think that residency adequately prepared you to practice in this setting? Or do you think that you had to adapt a lot of your knowledge to the resources and situation that you had chosen for your career?
I did a traditional allopathic residency in urban Denver, Colorado, where we had a lot of resources. And all of our professors were academic, tenured professors who had no experience even in private practice. That said, my background, the breadth of knowledge, the experiences that I had, I was taught neurology very, very well. And I have had to adapt my knowledge of neurology to the resources that are available to me in an area that is not well resourced. So, for example, I just had to have you pause the podcast for a second because I'm the functioning nurse for the IV that's going on while we're talking here. Most people have a nurse, but my medical assistant had to go home early today. So I'm the only one that can unplug and plug back in the IV. And so, you know, that's putting in an IV wasn't really something I was taught to do in residency. So I've had to adapt those skills that I've learned throughout my entire medical career. You know, in a lot of ways, though, it's fun because you're taking your knowledge to a place that it isn't easy for people to get to you. So me coming to a rural area means that these patients don't have to drive up and over slippery mountains in the middle of the winter to see a neurologist. They can ask their questions closer to home. I know the resources in my community, and I can sometimes have to tell them, I'm so sorry, we just don't have that here. But I know that, and I can prevent a whole lot of heartache and looking and trying to find resources that don't exist. And sometimes I've figured out how to get online resources for my patients. So trying to bring the city to the rural area so that people here have those resources, sometimes it's frustrating, but a lot of times it's really fun and rewarding.
And apart from providing this level of access to your patients, what else do you find that's preferable to the urban setting, the large academic setting in which you trained?
I personally like the slower pace of life. My kids are growing up in a place where we have playgrounds. They are safe to play outside. There isn't a lot of traffic. Their schools have playgrounds and they get recess. And my oldest, who can drive himself to the gym, which is at the mall, and he can go get some dinner with his girlfriend. And I don't worry about them. I'm not having them drive high speeds or in very congested areas. It's just a much more relaxed place when I'm out of work. And I don't know, I kind of like running into my patients and people that I know who know me in odd places. You learn a different way of socializing with people that's really kind of community-based. You live, you work, you function in the community where you're seeing patients. And so you're all in the same boat together. And there's something inherently rewarding to that.
Is there a different pace to work compared to when you were in Denver? Or would you say the work pace is pretty similar?
Oh, no, I'm like a chicken with my head cut off and my tail feathers on fire, no matter where I am. So I'll tell you, though, I did just join a different practice that's in an even more rural area, about 45 minutes south, and I go there 2 days a week. And this is truly a farming community. People have lived there for generations, and their granddad and their grandma and their grandkids still live in that area. And that, which is a truly rural area, practicing there is much more relaxed. People come into their appointments 20 minutes early, they relax, they chat with the front desk person, they share stories because they all know each other. They're all part of the same community. And so it's much more like coming to somebody's living room when you come to my office than it is like coming to the office. And it is important. It's medical. We're getting things done, but it's a little more, I don't know, intimate in some ways. You know, it's more friendly. It's more community rather than, hello, doctor, how are you today? Or everybody knows everybody else. And it's a special existence and a special position to be the physician who can help people who are used to not having a lot of resources.
And you've given a lot of information, I think a lot of food for thought for our listeners who might be considering practicing in rural locations or with medically underserved populations. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I think that there are a lot of changes that have happened in medicine in my career and are going to happen over time. I got to tell you, though, the more rural of a location that I'm in, the closer I am to practicing the medicine that I train to do, that you train to do, that your listeners train to do, and that are really the reason we're here. There's a lot less bureaucracy out in podunk cow towns, and there's a whole lot less fast-paced busyness. And it's not for everybody, but it's definitely a lifestyle practicing medicine in a rural area. And if it's something that your listeners are interested in, I would definitely encourage them to check out a few small town practices and see what they think.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today, Jill.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast was created and produced by Sarah Schaefer. It is not recorded as an official podcast of any institution or organization. The podcast is unfunded. Opinions are those of the individual participants. Music by Audrey Nath. Artwork by Shivani Ghoshal. Want more content like this? Be sure to subscribe to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast on Buzzsprout to hear more about constructing your career in neurology. Follow us on Twitter at NeuroBolts and on Facebook at Neurology Nuts and Bolts to stay up to date on new content and give us feedback on what you want to hear. And tell your friends. Thanks for joining us.